My name is Aaron Ryan.
Hello, Aaron.
Hello, Bill. Bill's got the funky microphone today, haha.
Yeah, it has a mind of its own. Hey, well, our sponsor today is Guess.
Hold on, I think it's on my mug. Yep, Pape Machinery.
Pape Machinery. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they do everything when it comes to John Deere, ag, and turf. Go by and see them if you're looking for a mower, a tractor, implements, you name it. They have it in stock. They also handle the Honda generator line, which I think they sold a few last week with the high winds and high temperatures.
And the PG&E shutoffs.
Yep, yeah. And the thawing turkeys. And, yeah, it was quite a deal. So go by and see them. Their phone number is 226-9226. Or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And they have stores all over.
Yes. I think they're up to 35 stores now in the
No, because they just got all those states. Other ones in Washington.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they're up to 42 now. Yeah, they bought Washington Tractor here just recently. That was another 12 stores. So,
could see them almost anywhere if you're in the Northwest.
So if they don't have it, I think they can find it for you. One of their stores will have what you're looking for. They'll bring it right in and get you fixed up. So,
ta-da!
Yeah, there you go.
I just didn't want to cheat people out of that extra info.
Yeah, thanks for that, Aaron.
I was looking out for you, Bill. oh, it's going to be like that today, is it?
I think so.
Is it going to be like that?
Yeah.
Huh. Going to be like, are you going to be the Chris Wallace of the show today?
No.
Oh, thank goodness.
I won't go there.
You're walking home. Maybe I'll just drag you behind the car just to get it out of my system. Guy just irritates me so much. Why isn't everyone wearing a mask at your rally? Really? Oh, okay. So South Africa is basically, you know, on fire. Lots of things going on there. We'll be talking about that with our good friend, Dr. Harry Booyans. He's going to be on in the next few weeks, and that situation is dire. And if you're unaware of what's going on in South Africa, you can tune in at wethepeopleradio.us. We've done a bunch of shows on South Africa. You can get yourself all up to speed, and then he will give you the latest and greatest. We're also going to talk about fire, and then I think maybe next week. Fire and forestry, actually, because there's just so much, you know, lying and misinformation out there about how forestry actually works and how fire fits the landscape and whether or not it's global warming, blah, blah, blah.
Why are we really having all these fires?
Why are we really having all these fires? It's very explainable. And so our good friend Ray Haup, who is a registered professional forester and 30-year veteran of the Forest Service and happens to be a county supervisor in an area with lots of public land that is routinely on fire up in Siskiyou County. He's going to join us, too, in the next, I think it's next week. So keep an eyeball on the website, and you will be up to speed. And that is at wethepeopleradio.us. So today happens to be October 18th, 2020, and we're going to delve into the wide world of fracking. And I put, and fossil fuels, just, you know, because we're talking about other stuff. But
that's right.
Finally, my dreams have come true after almost 10 years. We found somebody who knows something about fracking.
You hear about fracking, but what is it really all about?
And every time somebody talks to me about it, I realize as I'm talking to them, they don't know enough to actually tell anybody anything.
All I know is it's starting to have earthquakes, and there's all kinds
your water is on fire coming out of your faucet.
Oh, yeah.
And you hear all this stuff, and it's like, you kind of think it's fake, but... And how does it fit into the energy portfolio, and what does that mean? And if we cut out doing it, what does that do? And I just think people ought to know because, well, these decisions are being made, and ultimately we're all picking up the tab. So our friend Jesus Arredondo is back with us. He was here a couple weeks ago. He is the principal and founder of Advantage Government Consulting, LLC. He has over 20 years of experience in public, government, and regulatory affairs, including concentrated experience in energy and agricultural policy issues, which is super helpful because those are obviously connected. He was the Deputy Secretary for Marketing and Communications at the California Trade and Commerce Agency. He was the Deputy Chief of Protocol for the state of California. He's just done all sorts of stuff, and he found this niche market, as he kind of told us last time. Maybe he'll give us a little more behind the scenes on that, but... He earned his undergraduate degree from the University of California at Davis and a graduate degree from the University of Miami and the University of California at Los Angeles. He served in the U.S. Army. He was honorably discharged. And he's an attorney. Huh. And he's not even 800 years old.
Yeah. I guess my only question is, when are you going to run for governor?
Or something. Yeah, what hasn't he done? So you can find all his information there, too. And their website for their business is ca-advantage.com. And we've got that all linked up for you. So, Jesus, we haven't talked about this topic off air, which is fun because now I don't know anything still. We'll go wherever you want to go today.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show again.
And, absolutely.
Bill, if you do become Chris Wallace, I might sign off with Aaron.
Yeah.
He's going to come up and sit in the car and film you being dragged behind the car.
I'm afraid I'll lose second chair.
Yeah, you might.
Just
you might.
Irritating.
So, the fracking, I think that, you know, confuses folks, and the worst part of it is that it confuses people that don't know anything about it,
right?
And are trying to explain it, and so that's what frustrates me the most is that before we can understand what fracking is and what it isn't, why don't we try to understand why we are so dependent on oil and what it would mean to end fracking and to end fracking? Let's put that word on the side for a second.
Okay.
Let's not even call it fracking. Let's call it extraction. But before we go there, I think that similar to what I did on the last show with energy, let's go to the kind of what I like to call is the 50,000 foot level first to understand, you know, what is it? Why the fascination with oil? Why the fascination with ending the use of oil? And does that really intersect? Does that logic really intersect when we understand, one, how much we consume, and two, what it would actually take to end our consumption and what it would do to us in the meantime? I think that there are a lot of crossing paths there that no one really takes the time to understand or to look at. If we did, I think you would find, as I have found, because that's how I try to understand it first, is that, you know, where does all of this start, and how can all of this be ended, if that's truly where we're going, and California has launched in that direction. So let me start first of all with explaining to everyone, Californians consume an immense amount of energy. And we have an incredible thirst for petroleum products. Let me say that again. We have an incredible thirst for petroleum products. And this underpins our modern lifestyle, well beyond gasoline, for our cars and our trucks. Most of what you see around you, wherever you're sitting right now, if you're in your car and listening, virtually everything in your vehicle is petroleum, comes from derived from a petroleum-based product. Not just the gasoline, not just the oil, but everything around you. All of the plastics, all of the rubber, all of it. If it's not derived from petroleum-based products, you're not sitting in it. If you look around your house and you suddenly were to start to take away all of the plastics around you, you'd be left with very little, because there's a lot of plastic material, even in the chair that you're sitting in or the couch that you're relaxing in, or the radio that you're listening to right now, or the computer that you're using to listen to this show, or if you've got the football game on in the background on mute, none of that works if not for petroleum-based products. So how do we meet our need in California?
Hold that thought, and that way we won't interrupt you on the next part. But, you know, while we're doing that, I'm going to have to find the list of all the things that are derived from cattle byproducts, too, because that list is insane, including your tires. When you said tires, I was like,
sure.
Yeah. Cattle byproducts are everywhere as well. Mm-hmm. So all these things that have been demonized are...
Yeah, you might want to give it a second thought.
Yeah, you can't peel that out of your life, but people don't know.
Exactly.
So, you know, hey, it's easy to say we don't need it. We'll be right back with our guest, Jesus Arredondo. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about
People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Rest assured, don't get your money's worth. With this show, it happened all right. The Oxy Show, it's a dynamo.
That's like my reminder song, because you can actually see it. Robert videos the show, so you can actually see it on our website, or you can watch it on the AUN, on the American Uncensored Network. And I think that's also going to be, it is on Roku. So that's kind of fun.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so some people like watching it, and some people would rather listen, and then other people are just haters, and they listen to other stuff. They listen to Chris Wallace. he's never going to outrun his debate performance, I don't think. All right, so Jesus, back to the matter at hand.
Yeah. So let's just go back to how much we consume in California. Remember, we're just looking at California. So on a standalone basis, California is the fourth largest global consumer of energy. And to meet our needs, the state at present imports a little bit better than 74% of our crude oil into the state. So this is in 2019 figures, and it's a new record, and it seems like year on year we have had new records. I expect that 2020 we'll see a huge decline because of COVID, but that's a black swan event in economics. That's an anomaly that could not have been predicted.
Although they'll probably use it to make policy.
Well, they'll use it to make policy, but my challenge, and I'll explain it a little bit more, is I don't know how you do that. So when I say we're importing 74% of our, a little bit better than 74% of our crude oil needs in California, first they're coming from foreign countries, but why are we importing 74%? I think that's the one question I think that's probably, or the one number that might surprise a number of folks in California. So in 2019, before we had COVID, you would get into your vehicle every morning and you'd go to work, or you'd drop off your kids, or you would go run your errands. If you're retired, you're going to play golf, or you're going to meet with your friends for breakfast. Whatever you were doing, you were typically jumping in a car first thing in the morning. And or if you're in business, you're going to the office, you're jumping on an airplane, you are jumping on your computer and you're ordering stuff from Amazon to be delivered, UPS, FedEx, U.S. Postal Service. All of these things have oil components to it, and people don't really realize that. They think that the Amazon truck magically appears and that it must be running on fairy dust or unicorn power.
FedEx truck, definitely running on unicorn poop or whatever.
Sure.
They power themselves up.
So let me just throw three numbers at everyone here. 43 million gallons of gasoline is what we take in on a daily basis in California, non-COVID years. 43 million gallons of gasoline, that's what it takes to move us every single day.
Wow.
13 million gallons of diesel every single day. So 43 million gallons of gasoline, 13 million gallons of diesel, and 10 million gallons of jet fuel. Every single day. That's just California, okay? That's what makes us the fourth largest consumer of energy in the world. Fourth largest consumer of energy in the world. Now, why in the world would we be importing 74% of our crude oil need? Well, I just told you, 43 million gallons of gasoline, 13 million gallons of diesel, and 10 million gallons of jet fuel every single day. So, well, Jesus, why can't we do more in California? We used to. We used to. In 1975, we imported only 5% of that need. Only 5% of that need we used to import. Now, granted, 1975, we didn't have as many cars as we have on the roads today, so that's the next natural question, right? It was, well, how many cars do we have on the road? 36 million vehicles are registered, according to the Department of Motor Vehicles. 36 million vehicles registered running in the state of California today. During COVID, that number fell way off because we couldn't go anywhere. Everything was closed. So, again, 2020 is going to be an anomalous data year on energy and on oil consumption because of that. And I worry, like you said, Aaron, that there will be policymakers that will say, well, look, we didn't consume any. Yeah, you
exactly.
didn't go anywhere anyway, mm-hmm. right? You didn't go anywhere. So please, please, please think about that. So let's just take that 74% number for a second. What is 74% of that annual need? Well, it translates to 342 million barrels of oil on an annual basis. 342 million barrels is what we imported. And so where would that oil have come from if it didn't come from California? Could we do more in California? Those are very important policy questions. Yes, we could do a lot more. Remember, in 1975, we only imported 5% of what we needed. Today, we import 74%. So where is that oil coming from? It's coming from very stable parts of the world, you'll be glad to know, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Nigeria, Angola. That's just to name a few of the paragons of human rights and child protection, right? So when we look at this, this is what frustrates me the most from a policy perspective, is from one side of our mouth, we hear our politicians say, we've got to do more to protect the environment. That's what California has turned into, right? We have to do more about protecting the lives of children. California has turned into that. And we have to do more to protect the rights of everybody. We protect the rights of everybody in California. And when we don't like what another state, another U.S. state, does, or if they don't do as much as we do, we ban travel. We ban official state travel. We ban public universities from going to those states to play football, to play basketball,
right.
to play baseball.
About that.
We don't let them go. We've stopped it because how dare you not look at things the way California does, right? And so crazy we've become in California that from Oklahoma, we said, we are not taking oil. We are not taking oil from Oklahoma because their LGBTQ policies don't align with California's views. Think about that for a second, okay? What happens to gay people in Iraq, in Saudi Arabia? Let me tell you, they throw them off tops of buildings. Now, how does that align with the policy of California? Not at all. But we are perfectly okay with taking 342 million gallons from those countries, but we won't take a drop of oil from Oklahoma. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And this is where policy has completely disconnected from reality. And so I go back to this number of 74% of our oil, 342 million barrels of oil. And I asked this question, and I couldn't find it anywhere. I asked the legislature. I asked, and there were a couple of legislators who were very helpful and who said, that's a great question. We should pose that question to somebody. Who should we write to? And I said, well, ask the legislative analyst's office, ask the commission, ask CalGEM, which is a division under the Department of Resources that tracks all of these numbers for the state of California. What does that translate to? How much did California pay for those millions of barrels? And what would that look like? I always like to do this. I always like to take numbers like that and translate them to how many books would that have bought in California for schools?
Yeah.
Because we're always defending schools. How many people would that have fed? Because we're always trying to feed everybody. And how many homeless people would that have helped? Because we're trying to do that too. Remember, that was Governor Gavin Newsom's that was his number one priority. Hasn't been solved yet. And he's still working very hard on it, I'm sure, but nothing has happened on that.
Right.
He pulled together a task force, that has not generated one piece of paper. I don't know how much money has been spent on that effort. But let's look at what California's present deficit is. And just as a reminder to the listeners in California, $54 billion is what our deficit is in California. We kind of papered over it legislatively. We borrowed from the future. We're hoping that in a Biden administration, the Biden administration is going to send $1.2 trillion to California, and that's going to solve all of our debt problems, and we will right the ship. But the California's present budget is approaching $209 billion. So let's go back to that 74% number. 74% is what we're bringing in from all of these wonderful countries that protect human rights. And we seem to not mind that we're putting out that much money. The alternative is that we could be putting that money to work here in California. We could be putting more Californians to work by allowing more extraction in California for that need, or even paying other Americans for that energy resource need that we have in some of our neighboring states. But we elect not to do that. So what does that translate to? Well, that translates to almost the entirety of that deficit at $54 billion. Now, how interesting is that? That the same amount that we are in deficit right now is what we're actually paying for in oil. Foreign oil. The countries that could give a hoot about California's policies on children, policies on women's rights, policies on LGBTQ, they could give a hoot. And it seems like we're sticking our head in the sand like an ostrich and saying, well, so long as nobody asks, let's just let it go and go ahead and pay nearly $54 billion for that oil that we desperately need, because we need 43 million gallons of gasoline every single day, 13 million gallons of diesel every single day, and 10 million gallons of jet fuel every single day.
Yeah.
But let's not take any from Oklahoma.
No.
Yeah.
That would be wrong.
We wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, I have a burning question, and I know you're going to get to it, but when we come back from our break, let's talk about how much oil is in California that we don't want to tap into.
Is that on our list of things?
Well, great question.
I think.
Okay, we'll celebrate Bill's great question while we get a little message from our advertisers, and we'll be right back. You are listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Welcome to the Hotel California. Such a lovely place, such a lovely place, such a lovely place. They're living it up at the Hotel California. What a nice surprise, what a nice surprise. When you're alibi.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
When the lights go down in the city and the sun shines on the bay, who I want to be there, yeah, in my city. Oh, 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 oh.
Yeah, because that's what we're headed for. So not to put too fine a point on it, but okay, so do we get to answer Bill's question now, or do we have to wait?
Let's take it this way. So we've been California's been declining in its ability to extract oil resources since 1969. There was an oil spill off the coast of California in Santa Barbara, near Santa Barbara, and that oil spill created regulation that was, I think, the beginning of the limiting of what California would be able to do in the future. At the time, California was the third largest oil producer in the country. People don't actually know that. Third largest oil producer in the country. We've never been better than Texas or the Permian Basin. We've never been better than that. But being third is pretty tremendous, right? think it would surprise most people to know that we're the sixth largest oil producer in the country. Sixth largest oil producer. Not bad. But not great when we're importing 342 million gallons, right? But that's because of our size, and that's because of our consumption. So could we do more? Yes. And how much more could we do? That's a fantastic question that unfortunately doesn't have an exact answer. But I could say that, you know, we had other, since 1969, about every 10 years, we've had increasing regulation, both from the federal and state governments. And not coincidentally, right, I don't think this will surprise anybody, during Democratic federal administrations, we've seen more restrictions. California became Democratic, and I might get in trouble with some of my friends for saying this, but when Arnold Schwarzenegger became governor, he was, I would say, the first in the series of Democratic governors that came back to California, and we started... We started going down a conservation, let's call it a conservation radicalization plan that has not slowed down at all. So every year more restrictive, every year we are blaming other people, and it tends to be the way of policy, of liberal policy, as being a student of policy and particularly around energy. Year on year, we become more and more restrictive. There are 26 agencies that that manage energy in California. So 26 agencies that you have to jump through hoops through in order to pull a permit that would allow you to extract oil. So when I hear the word fracturing or fracking, I don't think anybody quite understands what that means. And There are a number of definitions below the word fracking. Fracking sounds, I guess it sounds terrible to people that don't understand what the definition is, but oils and gases in the ground are found in very difficult to reach places, and in order to release those gases and release those petrochemicals, you need to either steam the area in order to loosen it, or you need to physically break into the shale of the rock formation in order to release the gas. And so when you say fracking, it's not a, you know, a 1 to 2 to 3 word definition that explains it. I will send you a link to the definitions of fracking, and you'll be surprised that, you know, we could do an entire hour on each of those different methodologies for what that hydraulic fracturing would be, which universally has been known, come to be known as fracking. So releasing that that oil, that natural gas, becomes more and more cumbersome from a regulatory perspective. So it becomes less and less because it becomes more and more expensive. And I think that that's what's happened in California. Why do we import 342 million gallons or barrels of oil for our annual needs? Because it's become too difficult to get it here. If we could easily put hundreds of thousands of people back to work if some of those regulations were not relaxed, but if they were changed. Because there is no place more cumbersome to extract oil than the state of California.
And you're referring to not necessarily the technological difficulty, but the bureaucratic difficulty of reaching.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and when we look at, you know, I said earlier we were the third largest producer of oil in 1969, without a doubt. You know, the technologies that existed in 1969 were nowhere near as safe as they are today. So there is no reason why we couldn't extract, why we couldn't move back to being the third largest producer of oil in California and solve a number of our economic problems, because we put so many more people to work. And the taxes that would be generated from the extraction would be phenomenal for the state. But oil has become a dirty word, and we want to do away with it in California, not the rest of the country, because I think the rest of the country is still rational. California has become irrational on this, and you know, we can't see the realities of our need, and I think it's just simply because people don't know. They don't realize how much of this energy we actually consume. And when you hear, you know, we recently heard the governor say that he's going to ban, if he has it his way, we would ban the internal combustion engine in the state of California beginning in 2035. Well, earlier I told you that the Department of Motor Vehicles says that we have 36 million vehicles registered in the state of California. How many of those are all electric right now? 750,000. So we're not even at a million.
Yeah.
Right? So how many, so I challenged myself with this crazy little exercise. How many millionaires are there in the state of California? Well, according to census data, there are 1 million millionaires in the state of California, at least millionaires. So some of them have a lot more money than that. Well, how come we don't have at least 1 million vehicles all electric registered in the state of California? Well, because there are at least 300,000 of those 1 million millionaires that have decided that that's not for them. So if those guys who can afford it the most aren't buying them, how can people that can afford it the least buy them? And how then can we get to 2035 and all of us driving all electric vehicles before we even tackle the question of infrastructure, right? That's the reality. And I think that that's what's missing in the public discourse on the policy side, is that, you know, how ridiculous are we being? And when we look at something like this, and so, you know, putting my pointy economist hat on, I would ask the other question is, how many policies are in place right now that are driving us towards 100% renewables in the near future that would do away with all of this oil, that would do away with all of our natural gas, that would do away with all of these things, right? And we are not accounting for how exacerbating that reality is going to be to all of the other products, as we were mentioning at the beginning, that would go away without petroleum-based products. If we do away with cattle, what is that going to do to our costs, right? So all of those things would eventually impact at the end of the day, it impacts the average everyday consumer, because if we're not producing that stuff here, it's being produced somewhere else and it's going to be shipped to us. Just ask Hawaii how things go for those people that live there on a regular basis. If you're just visiting Hawaii, it's wonderful. It's very expensive. But it's a great getaway, right? But then you come home and things are cheaper. You really don't spend enough time there to realize how much gasoline is. Guess what? California is number two on gasoline costs. So we're approaching that kind of reality that Hawaii has known for all too well and for all too long. And I've got some numbers that I want to share. And I don't know if we're at a place of another break, but
yeah, like
when
a minute,
we do have
a minute and a half.
Okay, so at the next break, I'll jump into those numbers. But let's keep going down this path of, so how much more oil could we actually produce? Well, at one point, we only imported 5%. Yes, we've grown a whole bunch since 1975, right? And we're going to grow a whole bunch more between now and 2060, which is the projections that we have on energy consumption right now, the best projections that we have. So if between now and 2060, we grow to 51 million people in the state of California, we're roughly at 40 million. That's 11 million people more in the state of California. That's an amazing amount of growth. Well, that's more homes, that's more energy consumption, that's more vehicles. Is an all-electric infrastructure for transportation real? I don't really think it is. And I think that at some point we have to reconcile the notion of at what cost do we impose all of these policies on ourselves? What is it going to be? Because if it's at any cost, then you're going to wind up with a lot fewer people in the state of California. I think that we wind up unwittingly ratcheting back the population to 1975 figures, because people just won't be able to afford it here and they'll go someplace else.
Yeah.
And it's not just going to be the rich people that can afford to leave. It's going to be everybody, because
sure,
we can't afford to be here anymore.
No.
Not tax-wise and not cost-wise.
Anybody who's looking at retiring, I mean, you know, you have to realize that you'll have twice as much money as if you move someplace else.
Well, just we have a relative that lives in Texas, and he was out just recently, and he said gas there is $1.60, and we're paying almost $4 here in California, and we think that's normal. It's not normal, and we've just become so complacent about it. But there's no reason for it.
And that's not the only thing. Anyway, it's unnecessary, too.
No good reason for it.
So here's my ode to global warming. We'll go out with that, and we'll come back with our guest, Jesus Arredondo. I made you a doctor. I guess you're a doctor now. Sorry, Jesus. You got to go back to school.
I was promoted.
You got to go back to school. Your dad's getting his dream. He's got all doctors in the family.
Yes.
You're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
All right, here we go, guys. No whining this time. And one.
Hot in here.
Seriously, dude.
There's a crisis on the planet. It's heated up almost a whole degree. It hasn't been this hot in a long time. Not since the 16th century, when there were no evil SUVs. Stop global warming. It's up to you. The Earth's been the day it started spinning round and round. Stop global warming. Get your head out of the clouds.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
Now don't talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days, even the air. You're running out of rhinos, what do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin. Let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment. We ain't.
We haven't played that one in a long time. I love that song.
That's the party I want to go to.
I ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. all right, hit us with more numbers, Jesus.
Sure. I've got numbers coming out of my ears. So, 1985. Just back to the before I forget the question on the. On the, how much more could we produce? Could we pretty close to what we need?
Mm-hmm.
So, 1985, we produced 394 million barrels per year. By 2018, we are nearly 60% down off of that number. So, if we could generate production, and remember, from 1985 to today, regulations have just gone crazy. Our ability to do certain types of extractions. Where we can do the extractions, again, has been grossly limited over those years. I believe, this is unscientific, so this is just my views and my views only, based on all of the data that I've reviewed, and I've reviewed thousands of pages of oil extraction data, I believe that the state of California could achieve about a 70% of our need extraction in state. And that's before we would tap anything offshore. If we were able to do some offshore extraction with all of the regulations in place today, that would be done in the most benign way possible. Yes, nothing is without risk. But if you walk outside, you are engaging in risk today. I can't say, not without risk, but I can also say, everything that you do is a risk today in the world. So are we going to be nervous Nellies all the time, or are we going to figure out a way to become more self-sufficient in our needs and keep our costs down? Because at the end of the day, that's really what it should be about. It should be about a quality of life. And I think that that's some of what policymakers have forgotten. So if we, imagine if we could generate, if we could produce 70% of our need, we would really whack into that number of oil, of barrels of oil that are coming from those countries that we claim we don't ever want to see the light of day on those, on their social policies, right? Let's take some of that oil from U.S. domestic resources and, you know, keep putting Californians to work. At present, 500,000 people are employed in the oil industry in California. These are family wage, well-paid jobs, and that generate over $60 billion in tax revenue for the state of California. It's an industry that's worth north of $400 billion annually. And that's the other question that I have for policymakers in California, and I think that it's a serious question that has to be answered. What in the world will you use in 2035? Let's assume that by 2035 we do not have the internal combustion engine working in the state of California. Let's be fanatical about it right now. And that we have banned oil and that we've banned everything petrol-related. What are you going to use, policymaker in the state of California of the future, to replace a $400 billion industry that is a pillar of this economy? What will you use? What will happen to that vast area in the Bakersfield region that currently produces 70 to 80% of our in-state oil, that all stays here, by the way. We consume it. What will happen to those people? Where will they go? What will they do? What will the state do in order to recover that part of the economy? I mean, I we've heard the promise, and I jokingly say we had our first Democratic governor with electing Schwarzenegger. He came in with a lot of good promises, but in my opinion, those were never really delivered on.
No.
And that's my personal opinion.
That's so okay. We're all on the same team here.
My friends can throw rocks at me, and they have. But
you can't refute that.
That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
You can't refute that. Remember, he came in saying, we're going to make 100 million jobs are going to come. I don't remember the crazy number that he threw out. And then the University of Berkeley did a study, and it was very quietly done, and they said, actually, you know, it's not going to be 5 million, or 10, it was 10 million. It's not going to be 10 million jobs. It's going to be more like maybe a million jobs. And then they revised their study again, and they said, actually, it's not going to be a million jobs. It's going to be more like 150,000 jobs. And how many jobs actually were created out of those policies? 10,000 jobs.
That's close.
Yeah. 10,000, 10 million. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Exactly. But see, that's the craziness, right,
yeah,
of the whole thing, is that we're being led down that same path again with the same promise. And I'm sorry, but I saw that movie before, and it didn't go well for us. And this is, you're talking to a guy who has permitted wind projects, solar projects, biomass projects. I permitted the very first battery, what's called in the industry called a utility scale battery project in the state of California. I permitted the very first one. It's a 20 megawatt battery, 20 megawatt hour battery that discharges either in 4 hours or in 15 minutes, and it sits in beautiful Pomona, California. How many jobs did I create with that project? Well, I didn't. The owners did. I just did the permitting. Well, during construction, it was 68 jobs. Construction lasted 6 months, and then those jobs went away. So, but Jesus, somebody has to operate that facility right now, right? It's 20 megawatts, 20 megawatt hours. How many jobs? Well, I'll let you two guess. I'll give you each one guess. How many jobs in Pomona?
I'm going back to 17. That's my lucky number.
Okay, lucky 17.
I'm gonna go with 100.
Okay, zero is the answer.
Yes,
not one job. Not one job. Not one job. It is dispatched from Utah, and it's one person in Utah sitting at a computer.
Oh my gosh. Not one
job was created with that battery unit. It takes 4 hours to discharge it, or 15 minutes, depends on what the conditions of the grid are, and it takes 9 hours to charge it. It doesn't produce one electron, not one. Something else has to charge it. So there's the problem with batteries, right? Does it produce a useful service? Absolutely. But what we forget is that something has to charge it. And the way we've been dispatching batteries is it's not what we thought it was going to be. They're doing their job because it's just inertia on the system. And we'd need a whole show to talk about how the grid actually works. But that's the reality of the renewable promise. It's nice, it sounds good, and it's well-meaning. But in reality, you know, the problem is that I think the policymakers that have made these policies are long gone by the time the policies are in full effect. They're off to their next job if they're reelected somewhere. And the problem they left behind is somebody else's problem. So that's what we have. You know, 1969, we started imposing rule after rule on the extraction of oil in California. Back then, we were the third largest oil producer in the country. Now we're number six. We need 539 million barrels of oil to suit our needs. And right now, we're importing 342 million of those.
Holy crap. Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad we have another hour with you. We have to take a quick break for the news. It's not Chris Wallace, though, so never fear. But we do have a special song for you. It's the Jesus song. Be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
I can see by your eyes you must be lying. When you think I don't have a clue, baby, you're crazy. If you think that you can fool me, because I've seen that movie too.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just off I-5. And you can give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And if you can't remember any of that, you can go to our website at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah, it's all there.
Simple Simon. And we have video on a lot of the shows since the first of the year here in 2020. And I have added them not only to the pages for the programs, but to the archives. So you have a really quick link there. If you just click on the archives and you'd rather see what was going on, the buffoonery. I don't know. Some days have more buffoonery than others.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, those links are in there for you in the archive as well. So thanks, Robert, for doing that. He sits just off camera. He's our in-studio entertainment. Let's see, what else? I guess I'm going to skip all the announcement things because we have way too much information to get to. And we've been dying to get our guest back here, Jesus Arredondo, to give us the rest of the story on all this fossil fuels and the enormous, I don't know, it's kind of a wedge issue, I guess we'll call it, fracking. You know, yeah. They throw it around like you're just supposed to hate it, but the numbers in California are staggering. Just in California, we're what, the fourth? Let's see how much we retained. We're the fourth largest consumer of
energy.
Energy.
Yep.
Yes.
Like
correct.
Anywhere?
Like in the world.
In the entire world.
Yeah.
Okay. And yet we import 74% of the fossil fuels used in California, but we claim to be going 100% renewable by 2035?
45. By 2035, we want to ban internal combustion engines.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I believe we're sitting really on the largest reserve of oil in the world. I think we're bigger than the Middle East, but we don't want to. We don't want to get into that, you know, because it might
use it and everything. Boo.
Yeah.
We'd rather import it from foreign countries rather than states that actually produce it here in the U.S. because we're mad that they vote for Trump. Why don't we like them? I forgot.
They like guns, too.
Oh, yeah. Oklahoma and those guys.
Yeah. Evil people.
Okay. Well, just in case people thought there was a sensible explanation for all this, there it was, right there. Yeah,
that's it. As good as it's going to get.
That was the rookie recap. back to the expert.
Yeah, let's go. I don't want to gloss over fracking, since that was the whole basis of the invitation to get folks to jump in. So. Why fracking? What's so special about fracking? So fracking extends the life of wells. So first you're going to go. It's kind of think of a fruit.
Your signal is breaking up in kind of a weird way. It's kind of getting distorted a little.
Is that better?
Hey, that's pretty good.
All right, I'll hold the mic closer to me.
Something weird is going on.
I apologize for that.
Thank you.
Let's look at fracking from this. I was trying to think of a good analogy, and coming from farming, I'll use this analogy. When you extract oil or any kind of fossil fuel from the ground, the low-hanging fruit is the low-hanging fruit. So think of a fruit tree. The fruit you can reach is the easy one to get, so we're going to go get that first. And then increasingly, the fruit is higher. It's a little bit harder to get to, and it used to be that you would send a younger person or somebody who was nimble enough to scurry up the tree and pull down the rest of the fruit. As time went on, technologies improved, and we were able to invent ingenious things like something to reach them and cradle the fruit as you brought it down so it wouldn't just fall to the ground and bruise. That's what's happened in fracking. That's what's happened with extraction. Increasingly, time has brought us newer and newer ways to extract that harder to get to oil. It's deeper in the ground, or it's in areas that are geologically a little bit more difficult to get to. And so the fracking term, which everyone hates, is been demonized into something horrible. It's you're not holding the 3-month-old baby as high as you can and screaming at it to get the fruit, although the baby doesn't know what it's doing. It's almost like what I see, fracking becoming, right? But it's not. This is the extension of the oil production. And so fracking is enhanced oil recovery technologies, like injecting steam into the ground. It loosens some of those hydrocarbons, and we're able to extract them a little bit easier. Sometimes it's water; it's flooding the deposits and forcing the heavier oil to the top and picking it off the top, making it easier to extract. Sometimes it's a mixture of water, mud, and sand. A lot of sand is used in the extraction process, but all of this is fracking. And then some of it uses, you're using a lot of what I would say are household mixtures of different chemicals. I'll call them chemicals. People don't like me to use that word in the industry, but I'll call them chemicals because that's exactly what it is. But it's not anything that you haven't heard of. It's ammonia. It's things that we use around the house. It's soap. Sometimes it's as simple as soap. And I know that, the oversimplification, folks that are hearing this, that are anti-fracking, are going to say, oh, my God, this guy is lying. That is not what it is. Well, I would say it's what you've been indoctrinated to believe it is versus what it actually is. And I've been in the industry, and I've permitted these these projects, and I know exactly what it is. So, you know, hydraulic fracturing does use water pressure to increase, you know, the area of contact, what are called well bore areas. And this is what forces the rock formations to release, like I said, some of those hydrocarbons, and that's what hydraulic fracturing actually is. It's not a mysterious evil thing. It's just the changing technologies that we've used for decades and increasingly improving the way that that the technology works. You know, in 1969, we did not have the sensoring equipment that we have today. Today, you get so much data out of one well. You've got sensors on the outside of the well. You've got sensors on the inside of the well. You have sensors at every joint of the well. Everywhere where there's a well, there is a sensor. So we have an incredible amount of data that's being produced on a minute-by-minute basis that can be viewed in real time. And this is called predictive analytics. So predictive analytics is trying to give us a picture of what could be happening in the well to make it as safe as humanly possible. And technology has brought us that safety that we didn't have in 1969. And you know, had that had those technologies been available, you know, in 1969, would we have had the Santa Barbara spill that we had in 1969? I don't know, because you know, it takes human error to miss something, and you know, the machines are machines, and sometimes they do fail. But what we use today in the form of computer learning technologies is really, really remarkable. I mean, it is really, really amazing what we can see and what we can anticipate with the technologies that we have today. This is what is now being deployed. I know you're going to have a conversation on forestry and fires next.
We're losing your sound. How about this? Let's take a quick break, and I'm going to have Travis pick up the phone with you and see if we can get the sound, because when you fade away, it's always at the good part, because the whole thing is the good part. We'll be right back with our guest, Jesus Arredondo. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at We the People Radio. That was Bill. .us. People Radio is now on television in the Reading area, KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
A couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles, kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendants. 30,000 feet above could be Oklahoma. Just a bunch of square cornfields and wheat farms, man, it all looks the same. Miles and miles of back roads and highways connecting little towns with funny names. Who'd want to live down there in the middle of nowhere? They've never drove through Indiana. Met the man who plowed that earth, planted that seed, busted his ass for you and me. Call a harvest moon in Kansas, and they'd understand why
shout for the flyover states. These guys are producing while we are consuming. Busy out here in California consuming.
That's right.
From the Middle East. Yeah. Okay. All right, Jesus, back to you.
I hope you can hear me a little bit better now.
Yeah,
there's
good.
A little blowing on the microphone, so, but keep talking.
Well, I'll hope that that improves.
There we go.
Okay. Maybe it was too close to me at this point.
Sorry.
One of the things that I wanted to just go back to is the amount of sensoring equipment that we have in today's modern extraction process. It's something called predictive analytics. We monitor and we censor everything. We see it in real time to anticipate when there's a problem or when there's a potential problem. When predictive analytics and real-time monitoring tell us that there is, I mean, we can see now the most minor of vibrations begin, then there is a, they're under regulation from the state of California. We have to stop production so that you don't have well blowouts like you used to have, in years past. Not a real huge problem here in the state of California, mostly because, you know, here's another thing that Californians don't realize, and especially those that are fighting against fracking, inclusive of Governor Newsom, who is in one of his most recent executive orders, he said he's requested that the Department of Environmental Protection look at banning fracking by 2024. Well, only about 20% of the state's production comes from wells that have undergone some kind of hydraulic fracturing. So 80% of the wells don't use this. I think that increasingly 0% of the wells would use any kind of hydraulic fracturing in California because it's just too difficult to permit. So I can tell you, being an expert at permitting these types of projects, you can give me a project that says, hey, we need a fracturing permit, and we'll go try to get it. I'm not saying we're not going to be able to do it. I'm just telling you that we're going to go through a special kind of permitting hell in order to get it. So at the end of the day, it becomes a much, much more costly endeavor, and maybe you don't want to do it at the end of the day. And I think that that's how a lot of this will be abandoned eventually. It's not because those wells couldn't produce more. It's not that we couldn't become more energy independent. It's that we are electing not to. And and we are choosing other things like an electrification that's going to require batteries. It requires other minerals that, guess what? We can't even get them here. We couldn't dig for them if we tried because they don't exist here. So we have to go get lithium and cobalt from other parts of the world that also don't like us, by the way. So you're trading your what could be true energy independence by producing more in California to true energy dependence by having to procure the technology, the minerals, that would be needed for the technologies that you presume to make in California for the purposes of giving you energy independence, and that all of that is completely wrong. It is completely false on its face, and that's, you know, the hard question that I hope that policymakers will engage in 2021, that as we push towards these renewable ideas, that we realize that we're not really going to energy independence. We're becoming even more dependent, and I think that that's the more dangerous reality that we face here. You know, I'll go back to what we discussed before towards the end of the last show that we did, and that is that as California's population continues to increase or skyrocket as we used to think it was going to, kind of all bets are off given COVID, in the coming years, we'll need an ever-increasing supply of affordable energy. And I would underscore the word affordable, because California has gotten so expensive, and to meet that growing demand, if we think that we're going to, by 2060, still hit that 51 million people target, that 30%, roughly 30% increase in population means a significant increase in the amount of energy that we will consume. If we're going to become even more dependent on other sources for that power, that can only mean one thing, and that is that energy costs are going to go up.
Sure.
And if those energy costs are going to go up, then we have to figure out how we're going to bring those prices down.
Sure.
So, but let me just touch on so how expensive are we right now? So California gasoline prices, the latest figures are in, so I can give you brand new numbers. So right now California's average, which for August, which is the most recent numbers, is $3.23 a gallon. The premium above the rest of the U.S. is $2.11. That's a 52% to 52.9% difference. So that's remarkable, right? How is it that we're continuing to grow this much? So California right now has the second highest gasoline price among the U.S. states, behind only Hawaii. So congratulations, California.
Yeah, we've done a great job with that. And yeah, the sad part is that the influx of people into this state, I think, as a majority, are not people that can really afford those high energy costs.
Correct.
I mean, we're not importing high tech into California. We're exporting high tech. I mean, it's people are leaving, and what's filling the vacuum are middle to low income people that are finding it very difficult to live here. So,
well, and that's what's creating, I think that's what's going to create a challenge of homelessness, right? Because they're, how are they going to pay for these high costs? And that's the one thing that I continue to scratch my head on and say, okay, listen, you know, these, and I've got more numbers from reports that are created and generated by the state of California for the state of California policymakers to understand what it's going to take. And to reach that 100% green future, the California Energy Commission commissioned a report that was produced for them and released. It's in draft form, so it's not finalized yet, but it's called the Senate Bill 100 Joint Agency Report. And it says that that in order to get to 100% green, we will need to add an annual cost of $66 to $74 billion a year. That's on top of the $100 billion that it costs us in energy today. So what does that translate to? Because you know, those numbers are so cartoonish that it doesn't
mean
anything.
Yeah, it's just never going to happen.
So here's how it translates. Right now, you pay an average of 19.61 cents per kilowatt hour for your electricity. That's what is multiplied by the number of kilowatt hours that you use in your home. And so let's say that on average it's, a couple hundred dollars a month for your bill. When you go forward on in those numbers and you look at what would be the average added cost, we look at a 16 cent increase per kilowatt hour, for that energy cost, increase. So that's nearly doubling your average cost today. So if the average energy bill is $200, just for the sake of argument, and some people have smaller places and might be a lot less, but some people have larger places and might be a lot more. You would double your energy bill. Double your energy bill.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we survive? And that's just a portion of it, right? So if that's a portion of it. And then there was another study that was released by the California Air Resources Board, another study commissioned by them. And they said, gosh, in order to quickly get to all-electric transportation future, in the next 5 years, we need to spend $15 to $30 billion. The report is called the 2020 Mobile Source Strategy Report. That also is in draft form, by the way. It's a 145-page short read. So if you have an insomnia problem, I would encourage you to log on to the CARB website and try to read this fun document. I did manage to get through it, but that's another story. So I guess, you know, I go back to and I put it back into my Democratic friends, you know, on their plate, and I said, you know, I'm a reader of history, and I remember a very good quote that one of my favorite Kennedy quotes, and he said, "We all cherish our children's future." That's true, but has California forgotten that quote?
Yes.
Has Democratic California forgotten that quote? Because consider the impact of these soaring energy costs, the impact to consumers, to today's children and their future. Yes, it's in the name of climate change. I get it. But at any cost, and underscore at any cost, or should there be a moderated approach that will not forfeit the financial future of today's children in the form of exacerbated energy costs for generations to come?
Yeah.
So, that's the challenge, and I think that's what the policymakers really need to talk through. And it's not that it has gone ignored, because I have a very good friend at the California Public Utilities Commission. His name is Edward Randolph. He's the director of energy policy at the PUC. And he told legislative members in a hearing earlier this year that for every $1 billion of investment by the in-state utilities, so this is PG&E, Southern California Edison, SDG&E, that translates to every $1 billion of investment translates into a 7% increase in electricity rates to consumers. In a discussion last month to an association of energy companies, Randolph again said that the hardening of the grid, and this is what you're going to talk about next week with your forestry expert, the grid, hardening the grid, making it stronger and more fire resistant, is going to cost us an average of between 20 to 40% increase in state utility costs over the next 2 years. So a 20 to 40% increase in rates.
In 2 years, that's going to be...
In 2 years.
That's going to be very difficult to swallow.
That is remarkable, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice word for it.
But these are the policies that have been imposed by legislators as part of, you know, getting to our new future world. But again, I beg the question, should it happen at any cost? And I don't believe it should.
Yeah, that's
so,
a big fat
you know, will
no.
consumers react to that? Will they speak up to it and speak out about these looming costs? I hope they do. I hope that people are listening. I hope they're paying attention, because this is the critical discussion that I think legislators and policymakers must have. It is paramount that discussion happens, because otherwise I think we're forfeiting our future.
Yeah.
Yes. But in California, they always have, you know, a new distraction, and I would venture to say that marijuana has become the major distraction.
Dumb them down.
Yep.
The problem is, if you go down this road in California and these rates do jump like you're talking about, other states are heading down the same road. I mean, this isn't just a California issue. So, I mean, it's coming to get you.
The guys that are producing are going to produce more, and those states are going to, populations will boom. All right, we've got to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Jesus Arredondo. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm already spending more on this all going to pot. It's all going to pot. Whether we like it or not, the best I can tell, the world's gone to hell and we're all gonna miss it a lot. All the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee just couldn't hit the spot. Got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot. I got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, cause it's all going to pot.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network.
Give a man a free hand. house and he'll bust out the windows, put his family on food stamps. Now he's a big spender, no food on the table, and the bills ain't paid, cause he spent it on cigarettes and PGA. They'll turn us all into beggars, cause they're easier to please. They're feeding our people that government cheese.
California is going to become a net importer of government cheese and marijuana.
Yeah.
If they think we're going to pay 40% more for power.
I know. We were talking on the break. You know, there's a tremendous amount of people that are on government aid in the state of California, and their utilities are going to go up too.
And they qualify for reduced fees on utility. So how's that going to work?
Yeah. Well, they're still going to pay more, and they can't. They can't.
Yeah.
I mean, they just don't have the money, and I don't know. I think you're going to see homeless go.
So, Jesus, just out of curiosity, because I know you have to sit through meetings with people who, with a straight face, tell you that they're going to do this stuff and it's going to work out. Do you think they actually believe that?
You know, I without giving you the name of the person, let's just say it, very high.
It's not Arnold Schwarzenegger again?
No, This was after Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, okay.
I already used his name. So, but this was at one of the energy regulatory agencies. The gentleman, so I just gave it away, it's a man, claimed credit for being the guy who said, I'm the one who convinced Governor Brown that a renewable portfolio standard of 100% all renewable power in the very near future is the right way to go. And he was new to that regulatory body, and I said, do you really believe it? And he said, oh, 100%, absolutely. Why not? And I said, well, I see all the problems, right? You know, California must and can become more self-sufficient, but it's an all-of-the-above energy approach, which includes oil and natural gas. And yeah, renewables, but we know that renewable intermittency is the problem. He didn't understand that, and it's not, and you know, it's coming home to roost in the with the blackouts that we had on August 14th and 15th. We talked on the last show about our dependence on the rest of the West for electricity.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's shocking in and of itself, right? You know, 20 to 30% of our electricity we depend on from the rest of the West. Well, think of these numbers. 70% of our oil we depend on, you know, countries like Saudi Arabia. 87% of our natural gas comes from out of state. Now, thankfully, that's still coming from the U.S. because it's just too darn expensive to ship it from someplace else. But think about that. You know, 87% of our natural gas that we use right now is coming from out of state. 87%. 70% of our oil that we need every single day comes from out of country. So these are really stupid numbers that are too giant to ignore, in my view, because these are numbers that could be reduced significantly if we did it in state. And you would be putting people to work in state. You would be generating income in state instead of sending that check someplace else. And so I think the future of California must be access to reliable and affordable energy. And that's going to be the key to the standard of living of California's families and communities if we're going to keep California golden. Now, if we don't care about keeping California golden and it's going to be California tarnished, then keep going down the path that we're on. And, you know, in a year or two, I'll still do your show, but I'll be calling in from somewhere else in the West.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, I think you and a lot of other people, I mean, it gets to a kind of a breaking point where, yeah, it's expensive to move, and it's going to be a matter of starting over and kind of reestablishing a lot of stuff, but you just can't afford not to do it. I mean, it gets to that point where you can't afford to stay anymore. I mean, people are seeing that now. Imagine when it hits a 40% increase in your energy bill. I mean, that's a determining factor.
Do you think they'll be smart enough to actually just like creep it up, or do you think they'll do like these just like they've done with gas?
Well, gas, yeah, they jumped it like 27 yeah, cents like, in one whack.
40
yeah.
cent tax on every gallon. Like, what?
Yeah, so the hard part is this, that you know, the utilities don't own the energy-producing resources. So they have to buy it from somebody else.
Right.
So there's a credit risk. So now we're talking about finances. So from a credit perspective, you know, I'm happy to give you a credit card, even though you have the worst, you know, financial background and record, and you could still get the Visa. It's just that your rate is going to be 22%, and because of my great credit history, mine is only 4%. So you'll still get be able to buy the power. It's just going to cost you a whole lot more, and so it makes it really, really difficult to afford you an incremental rate increase. Unless you're talking about that incremental rate increase lasting 15 years. And where are we going to be in 15 years? Well, we're going to be even more expensive because presumably we're going to be nearly at 100% renewable power. So that exacerbated cost is, you know, on top of, you know, we're compounding policies basically before we can get to, and we talked about this on the last show, before
right.
we can get to 17% renewables, we had already changed it to 20. Before we could get to 20, we changed it to 33. Before we could get to 33, we moved it to, we keep moving the goalpost. And now we can't move it beyond 100. But now what the realities are is that these costs are coming to us. And rather than depend on our vast resources from diverse, you know, types, you know, I wish that California policymakers would look at, you know, the vast oil, natural gas, and yes, renewable resources that can make us more self-sufficient and secure. And because we have the workforce, and we definitely have the technology to develop those resources safely and responsibly for decades to come, but I think we should be doing that more here at home and not depending on, I mean, when you think of lithium, we got to go to China because we just, you know, there was that big promise of, and why Tesla built that big gigafactory in Nevada, and they're discovering that the lithium that they thought was there is not really there to the abundance that we thought it was. Uh-oh, big problem. So
yeah.
Now it has to come from China. What about cobalt? Well, cobalt only comes from the Congo. And last time I checked, and you guys have done, you've done shows on Africa and that part of the world, you understand it better than I do, but the Congo is not exactly a very reliable or
no.
safe place.
No,
and they
pretty.
Certainly don't give a hoot about caring for children and children's issues, because it's the children that are mining that cobalt right now that the Tesla driver is enjoying in his vehicle.
Sure. And they care even less about whether or not America has batteries. I mean, they've got big problems over there that are on the front page.
What breaks these guys? I mean, what breaks this cycle? Because it seems
Yeah, and I think that you hit it on the head earlier, which is that 40%. I think it's the cost shock. I think it's going to take the public to say, you know what, this is too much. This is too much. And that's why I think that, you know, I ask the question, you know, is it at any cost? Because I don't think it should be at any cost. You know, it seems like, since the Schwarzenegger administration, we have tried every governor, every administration, and it's only two governors. I recognize that, but each of those two governors has tried to one up itself. Each of those legislators have tried to one up the previous one in a hurry to create their green footprint. Right? I think that they all saw what former Vice President Al Gore did and thought, well, I'm going to get rich too. So. 17%, no, that's not good enough. Let's go to 20%. No, that's not good enough. So the next guy said, I'm going to carry a bill to 33%. And then the next guy said, well, I'm going to carry a bill to 50%. And the next guy said, I'm going to carry a bill to 100%. And the governors in each of those subsequent legislative years said, yeah, because if I sign it, I signed it. So it's my bill.
Right.
So this is the craziness that we're living in, right? And And because politicians are politicians, they're moving on. They're not, I mean, you know, Kevin De Leon is now a city councilman in Los Angeles. He's behind SB 100, right? Does anybody remember him? Not really.
Mm-mm.
But he thinks that everybody remembers him. Well, I think that everybody's going to be cursing him when they're 40, when we highlight that, that 40% increase on your energy bill is, you know, send a thank you to Kevin De Leon.
Let's, we've got to take a quick break, but I'd like to touch a little bit more on the fact that I think people have the perception that, you know, when you drill for oil, you strike oil and it gushes out of the top of the derrick and it sprays oil all over the ground and it's a huge environmental mess. And I'd like to just talk a little bit about how the technology in this drilling has really improved to a point where it's not as environmentally damaging as what
whole,
I think
the
a
whole
lot
risk
of,
thing.
Yeah, I don't think it's as damaging as a lot of people think it is. Maybe
Well, they keep saying, oh, it's starting all these earthquakes and all that. Can you talk to any of that?
Sure.
Oh, awesome. Okay, we'll be back quickly. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
All my wolves begin to howl. Wake me up, the time is now. Can you hear the drum? Burns, sweat it out, lay my turn. Can you hear the drumming? There's a revolution coming. All this doubt is creeping in, inside out, shed my skin. Can you hear the drumming? There's a revolution coming.
We the People Radio is now on television in the Reading area. KRDT Channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on the American Uncensored Network. Not to put too fine a point on it, but we go when we've gone too far?
Well, I think when it hits people in the wallet and they realize they've been led down this rosy path, maybe it might be too late at that point because industry is going to completely collapse if we don't get on the right track here. But it always comes down to money, and when people don't have any money left.
Yeah.
They're going to look around.
How much pain are you willing to take?
Yeah. And go, what the
Well,
heck
and it always
happened?
Hits the rural areas first because we drive the most. So people in the city are busy, you know.
So before we run out of time,
or whatever they're doing,
talk to us a little bit about the difference between today and in the past when it comes to extracting oil and gas and how much cleaner it is, actually, than it used to be.
Yeah, the extraction process itself today is fairly benign compared to what it was before. You know, if you go back in history, read what it was like for Standard Oil to extract oil from the ground, back, you know, turn of the century, 1900s, very, very different than what it is today. The amount of, surplus or extra extract that just got basically thrown out. We didn't understand it back then. You know, it wasn't until a guy named Henry Ford invented the horseless carriage that we understood that extra residue from the refining process was gasoline and that it could be used in an internal combustion engine to make it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until then, literally it was thrown away. It was poured out. And it flowed into rivers and streams, and it made a disaster. But we started cleaning up, you know, at that time, and ever more, you know, we are now, I would say that 98% of the emissions in the extraction process are captured. So that's pretty awesome compared to what it was and what it is in the rest of the world still today. In the U.S., we have we have the EPA, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. We have air emissions rules at a federal level. Every state has their own EPA-like structure.
Oh yeah, you get
in
the
California,
water board,
we've complicated
the
even more with CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act. So everything is even more and more protected, and I think we try to create a process that is as benign as possible. Nobody wants the emissions. I mean, that's the fallacy, I think, of viewing the oil industry and the petroleum industry in this fashion, or even the energy industry in this fashion, that, well, they're just gross polluters, they don't care. That's not true. That's not true at all.
No.
We live by these rules that are so cumbersome that the last thing I want to do is violate any of those rules, because the financial covenants that allow for the development of those projects are tied to my violations. So if I violate one rule, guess what? I lose financing. And I can't lose financing. These things are so tied together, and this is such a capital-intensive process that one hiccup, one violation, and you could ruin yourself financially forever.
Right.
Because no one will come back to you. So the notion that the industry doesn't care and that it's reckless and careless is completely, completely false. The extraction process is so controlled. If I looked at one of my Venn diagrams of what it takes to extract oil, one barrel of oil, just as an example, there are 36 steps from extraction to a holding container, and not one ounce of refining has occurred at that point. Not one ounce.
Right.
So this is just the extraction process. So it's not the blowing out wells that you may have seen in movies. Yes, you still have the massive failures, catastrophic failures, like what we had in the Gulf a few years back. Those are horrific. But when you look at those and you do root cause analysis investigations, you find that there was human error involved. And so, back to your question, you said, the technology has improved. It absolutely has. So I think that some of that, when it's fully automated and it's allowed to be fully automated, and it is already, but when human intervention isn't there to screw something up, The machines actually, the learning technology that the technology of today has is really remarkable. It stops a lot of accidents.
Oh, it does. I used to call, I worked for a vendor that called on the logging industry, and a lot of the mills have cogen plants attached to them and they burn
run the operation.
Wood chips, yeah.
And
so they all have these big stacks where, the emissions come off. What people don't realize is every stack you see has sensors in it, and if the carbons or anything go over a certain amount coming out of those stacks, it goes right to Sacramento, and boom, they get notified in seconds, and that thing is either fixed or shut down immediately. So there's the pollution end of it.
The idea that you're just getting away with
just getting away with dumping stuff in the air. It just doesn't happen anymore. It really doesn't.
It's exactly right. The steam boilers in those units are fluidized beds that are capturing 99% of the particulate matter
and
biomass is phenomenal. I mean, that technology didn't used to exist, but it exists today. And exactly as you said, I always tell my clients, none of you look good in orange. And I don't mean that disparagingly, but neither do I. And I don't want to wear a county jumpsuit that says I'm going to jail.
Right.
So we're not going to allow you to violate anything, because the sensoring equipment isn't going to allow you. And the only time it does happen, because it has happened in the past, in the last 10 years, it happened once at a biomass plant. There was a dumb operator that physically removed a safety, and it blew himself up. I mean, he was fortunate that he didn't kill himself in the process. Sustained very, very bad injuries. The facility never ran again like it was supposed to. And that company lost its contract, and it's being sued, and, you know, it's 10 years in litigation. Nobody wants that. And so there, it's ruinous financially to everyone involved when something like that happens. So the notion that these companies don't care and that they flaunt all of these rules, that's absolutely not true.
Yeah, it's not true. You're right. And I think to go back, you know, and do offshore drilling, to do, which I know is really a dirty word, but we can do these things safely without destroying the environment and dig us out of this hole we're falling into right now. And people just need to understand that and vote that way.
Well, we have the resources. Yeah. And, continuing to put people in who are claiming that pie in the sky is actually edible is a giant mistake.
Yeah.
Hey, Seuss, we have like, I don't know, a minute left or so, and so we don't just cut you off. We're going to have to make you come on with us again in the future because this subject just never ends. And since you watch it so carefully, would you do us a favor? And as this policy stuff evolves, would you shoot us an email, and it's like, okay, people need to know.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, you know, come January or December, I mean, the legislature comes back to check in the second week of December after the election. We're going to start to see, you know, new policies emerge, new legislation promoted. And I think that, you know, at that time, you know, I'm watching these things anyway. So
okay.
As I start to see those policies emerge, I promise I would love to come back and
talk about some of the new policies that are coming. Pass them. Yeah, so we can get that word out to people. We would really appreciate it. Jesus Arredondo, we love having you on. It's been action-packed.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. I look forward to coming back.
All right.
Thank you. All right. You can find everything about the show at wethepeopleradio.us.